session number 11963, reel 1.
Captain Henderson, reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Captain Henderson?
I was born at Simonside, where we're sitting now. And my father was the local magistrate. It wasn't in a town. It wasn't in South Shields. It was simply a country.
And what was your actual date of birth?
The actual date of birth was November the 9th, 1897.
And how many of you were there in the family?
I had three brothers and one sister.
And could you tell us a little about your childhood? Was it a happy childhood? Were you comfortably...
Well, my principal memory of childhood was we attended a church school. It wasn't attached to the town at all, you know. It was one classroom for the whole school. There was a headmistress. But there was a starter's little room shut off from the rest. A school beginner's room. And we didn't do much, of course. Compared with the modern schools, we mainly religious, if anything, I should imagine, atmosphere. The vicar lived here in the days when most vicars were of independent means and didn't depend upon other things. And my father was the local magistrate. And my early memories of being in the world at all was the fact that I lived in a house which was used by the community to air their marital disputes, their financial disputes, and things like that. That my father was engaged in something where he did useful work. And those are my chief memories. Except for the fact, of course, we had a policeman here who carried out his own punishments by slapping your face and this sort of thing if he saw you misbehaving. I sang in the church choir here. It was the days when organs were hand-blown, and I blew the organ for years, with the result that I was very friendly with the local vicar here. I might mention casually that at one time I had 1 9 pence per week from his hand every week, because of circumstances. And those circumstances were, in those days, at the end of every church service on a Sunday night, there was an anthem given by a local singer, or from a distance, you know. And if they required to rehearse during the week, I was excused school for a particular day, and I got a shilling. In those days, there were no paper boys. There were only paper men. And the idea was that the paper men only came to the end of the bridge along the Wenlock Road here. And someone from the vicarage had to collect the paper every night and take it. And it was my job to collect the paper, get a halfpenny. At the end of the week, that was six. That was 1 6 pence. Now, in those days, the vicar and his cohorts played
croquet
on the lawn, and they required the lawns to be of a certain brand and kept well. So I was excused school on a Friday to be assistant to the vicar, gardener. And I might complain about some of the trees that grew outside here now, but on the other hand, I might be responsible for having put them in. So, otherwise, the big question is that when we got to a certain age, where were we going to?
When did you leave school? How old were you when you left the church
when
school?
When I left school, I should imagine I would be 14.
So that's a bit about 1911.
That's right, yes. That's right, yes. And I left Simonside school here to go to Stannard Road in the town.
That was another school, was it?
Another school in the town, from which I won a scholarship.
Now, what type of a school was Stannard Road School? Was that a grammar school or the equivalent?
Oh, no. Just an ordinary council school. And I should imagine that if anyone ever went to Stannard Road School, they had a good education. Nothing to what schools are like today, of course.
Was it a broader education than you'd had at the church school?
No, not very broad. Not as broad as Stannard Road, say.
That's what I meant. Was the Stannard Road school a lot broader?
Oh, yes. Yes, quite so. And at Stannard Road, the first year there, I won a scholarship to a town school, Westo School.
Sorry?
Westo, Westoe, at which I took the formal exams and this sort of thing and left with a nice recommendation.
Now, what did you plan to do as a career? Did you have any idea? Were you interested in your father's career, for instance, or what did you plan to do?
I'll take you back. This is a little personal. Our family are Northerners, of course. My grandfather actually came from inside of Scotland. But he was a civil engineer, had been to college and this sort of thing. And at that time, when the railways were developing in the early 1800-odds, you know, he was well up in the business and became part of the Northeastern Railway team to make the Northeastern Railway. And his most important job was the laying down of the crossing of the River Tyne at Newcastle. And he did most of the arrangements for putting the points down and this sort of thing. But unfortunately, he fancied his little drop too often. And he had contracts with most of the breweries in Scotland to lay railway lines and this sort of thing. And in the course of the events, things got very bad. And I always remember him. His favourite drink was pink gin. What pink gin was, I never found out. But three times he had contracts in America. And three times he got his luggage there, but he never arrived. And he was helped to come home, back home to Simonside again. That's just by the way. Now, I've always maintained in my own mind that the railway company's attitude towards his family was very gracious, because they gave a job to his sons. Two jobs. My father and his brother got jobs there, you see. And we were sort of a niche above the ordinary people. And my father, of course, by that time had worked his way into various railway jobs, not actually doing anything when the trains were running or anything like that, but in the way of, what shall I say, helping the general manager to see points that were never seen and this sort of thing. And he was a great favourite at York. And I had no hesitation that when he came home one day and said, "The general manager, I've had a word with him today, and he wants you to start in the accountant's offices and save your time as an accountant," which I did. And you've probably heard of George Butterworth, the composer. He wrote his father was Sir A.K. Butterworth, and George was killed at on the Somme.
So when did you leave Westo School?
Ah, no, that might be...
How long were you there to look at it from another... You went there about 1912.
Yes, 1912.
So you were just there a year?
Yes. Because I remember about that time in school holidays, my father used to let me travel the continent, you know, to get a bit of experience of things. And it served me in good stead that when I had to go there and fight too.
What do you remember about your trips abroad? Because that's unusual for a young lad to get abroad in those days. I mean, yes. Not so much now, but then it was. What trips did you go on? Do you remember anything about them now?
Yes, they were organised. When I say organised, he wasn't an organiser of trips for school children, but he was a friend of my father's. And he afterwards, in the Second War, became Minister for Wool. And it was the same name as the man who went to the South Pole. Who was that in 1913? Bradford. And they were quite homely dues, you know. They were conducted by his special friends, his friends, and one or two friends of my father's.
And how many would go on these trips?
Oh, about 12 a time, 12 a time.
12 lads?
12 young girls or 12 young lads and one of their parents, things like that, you know.
What would you do?
And I think the last one must have been in 1912. Because in 1913, December the 13th, 1913, I started for the North Eastern Railway Company in their accountants' offices.
Do you remember one of the trips, sir? Could you tell us a bit more about what actually happened or where you went?
Oh, yes. First of all, I remembered twice we did the Seine, upriver in boats, getting off, exploring, getting on the boat again, a bit further, and this sort of thing. And then the third one was to get across to Brussels and these places, simply by railways and this sort of thing.
Did you get on well with the French and the Belgians when you met them in peacetime?
Oh, yes. I saw quite a lot of people in France that I had seen when I was on... I especially went to see them, of course. Well, now, the time came for the war.
Hang on a minute. So you started on December the 13th, 1913,
yes.
In the accounts department.
Yes, under a contract that I would serve 12 months without pay to see whether I was suitable or not, But, unfortunately, the war broke out the next year, 1914.
What were you actually doing in the department? Can you remember much about the working methods?
The working arrangements there was to know what the railway consisted of. In those days, the railway company had docks. The railway company had mechanical works. They had hotels. They had trains running on the railways and this sort of thing.
And which firm was it, sorry?
The North Eastern Railway Company.
And where were you at? Where were your offices?
In Newcastle. It was the only Newcastle, the only office of the company that was in Newcastle. The rest were at York. And primarily they were at Newcastle because the principal commodity of the railway in those days was coal, moving coal. And if they were in Newcastle, they were in the heart of the coal field, you see. And... I spent a few years doing all sorts of jobs.
But during this first period, before the war broke out, you were mainly learning the ropes.
So oh, yes.
The whole...
being sent to help or see the signal department, what they did, what the permanent way people did. For instance, if they decided to renew a part of the line... They would ask the accountant to supply three persons to see what they were doing and furnish a report. They would ask me tomorrow, we want you to go to the station hotel at Newcastle and check goods from the stores to the kitchens. In other words, basics, you know, learn the basics before you did anything else. And then afterwards it was a question of what would you like to do? Well, I decided I would stay in coal after my original training, you know.
But you hadn't finished your training when the war broke out, had you?
No. I was going to say, I left, I was under a 12-month contract from December the 13th, but the war broke out on the 4th of August. And by that time, of course, there were people on the staff who were territorials, and the talk was of a war and this sort of thing. So when war was declared...
Hang on a minute, I'll come back. There's just a couple more questions before we move on to that. I'll be coming back to it. Were you in any of the boys' organisations before the war that you recall, either the Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade, any of the boys?
No. I did some scouting, but very little, because I had a father who required his family to be working for him 24 hours a day sometimes. Oh, yes, my bringing up was very close and... heavy at times. After I left the secondary school, I went to a commercial school to learn typing. My father had a Blickensderfer typewriter at home. I was learning on an Oliver, which had two different keyboards, and yet I was capable of coming home, doing his job at night, and doing the school work during the day.
So you didn't have much time for boys organising?
Oh, no. My only liberty that I took was to play rugby.
Who did you play rugby for?
Westo, in the town. And I became chairman in 1940 of Westo Football Club. We had cricket, of course, and hockey besides.
Right, you were saying that when the war broke out, there were some territorials already in your offices in Newcastle.
Yeah, that's right.
Had you ever thought of joining the territorials before the war broke out?
No.
Why was that? Was there any reason?
Well, just being busy at home and this sort of thing, not from any what you might call point of. Not being a soldier and being a soldier, that aspect was never entered. And
had you been expecting the war yourself? I mean,
oh yes, we knew it was coming. I think we knew it was coming. You see,
how did you know? I mean, did you take an interest in foreign affairs?
Oh, well, because chaps in the office were talking, and they were territorials, and they'd been summoned here once or twice lately, which gives them the idea there was something brewing. And naturally, I was caught up in the flow of human endeavour at that time, and I found myself in a drill hall joining the army the day after war was declared.
What, do you remember what your mood was on the day of the war, on August the 4th? How did you feel when you heard? Were you pleased, or how did you react?
Oh, well, it was all go. I might as well admit that I wanted to be there if there was going to be a scrap against Germany or somebody like that, you know. And the whole atmosphere of the country was so. We were just going along with the crowd. I didn't stand out by being different to anybody, but I...
Were you very patriotic?
Oh, I should imagine so, yes, oh, yes. I think my visits to France and the continent had implied in my mind what a lot of young boys didn't understand, between the difference between France and England and various things like that. And, of course, the high talk that I heard in my father's clique, councillors and aldermen and this sort of thing, I was getting a smattering of everything. And I thought, well, I'll be in this. And on the other hand, of course, I had a friend to join with. I made one or two friends amongst the chaps of my old age. And when the time came, we said we'd be there tomorrow morning to join the army.
Do you remember the names of the friends you went in with?
Yes, we were called one William Oliver.
Any of the others?
George Harbottle.
Do you you remember much about... You worked... You knew George Harbottle, did you, before?
He's still alive, my dear fella, and he's older than I am.
We've interviewed George. What was he like as a young man? Because I know him in his 90s, his late 90s.
Oh, yes. You know George Harbottle, do you? There you are, you see. Oh, George was our quartermaster sergeant.
But what was he like before the war? Did you mix... Did you know him...
Oh, well, he was a cricketer, yes, you see. And I met George as a cricketer. He played for South Northumberland. And he was a nice fellow, by Jove. George was always good. Now, he worked... I saw him every day, nearly, because he worked on the quayside. He was a coal man. Like, I was in the accountant's offices, and I went down to the quayside to meet fellas like George to have a coffee with and this sort of thing. And when I met George in the army, well, it was money for old rope.
So the quayside was quite a close community then?
Oh, yes. It was the richer side of the North Country. Mainly, there were members or the directors or the shareholders of coal collieries and this sort of thing. I had to go down to the coal building occasionally when they were handing out contracts if I wanted to know whether the North were going to contribute to the Norwegian railways contract, you see, for 200,000 tons in a certain time. I went down and came back with a report.
And that's where you'd see people like George.
Oh, yes.
So, what happened? A group of you decided you were going to join up on the 5th.
That's right.
So, did you have any idea which unit you were going to join? I mean, was there any unit you wanted to be in? Well,
it was the 6th Northumberland Fusiliers.
That's who you wanted to join, was it?
Yeah, because there were one or two people in the office were members of that unit already.
That was a territorial unit?
A territorial unit.
So which barracks did you go, or which recruiting office did you go to?
To the St. George's Drill Hall, Newcastle.
And you actually went with George Harbottle at the same time, did you?
He was a territorial.
So you went down, what happened when you got to the drill hall, do you remember?
Oh, yes, we just had to take the oath, and we got a shilling, and we were in the army.
Did you have a medical at the time, a medical examination?
No, later on we had, later on.
But not at that stage?
No.
So after you'd taken the oath and got your shilling, what happened then? Were you sent...
This is the tricky points, you see, you have to remember. We were told that we had to go to the Northumberland Hussars stables and help to feed horses and water them for the next fortnight.
So you went straight from St. George's?
That's right.
Up to...
Straight to feed horses.
And where was the stables? I can't...
Oh, just north of Newcastle. It's quite an easy journey, you know. But we all laughed and... It's the first time I had anything serious to do with horses. That's where I got learned to get on their backs and this sort of thing. Yes.
Now, when you joined up, how did your family react to the fact you joined up? They hadn't had much of a connection with the army.
No, well, my father wouldn't speak to me.
He was really furious.
Oh, he's furious. Oh, yes.
Why was he furious, though?
I don't know. If I tell you that he afterwards became chairman of the military tribunal.
Deciding on conscientious objections and exemptions.
That's right, yes. He didn't like his son joining the army, but... He left to sit on judgment of other people who didn't want to join the army, you see.
So that caused a bit of a rift with your father between you and him?
Oh, no, I didn't cause any rift because the first time I came home on leave, he waited until 12 o'clock
We'll be coming to that, so I'll keep that. So, but when you actually joined, he was very annoyed.
Oh, yes, yes.
What about your mother and the rest of your family?
Oh, my mother cried and, you know, this sort of thing. But you had to get over it. There was lots of lads beside me joining the army. By Jove, they were going in the thousands.
What
know?
About your brothers? How did that... Did
oh,
that
well, I had an elder brother who went straight away to the RODRE, Railway Operating Troops. See, we were railway people. And he was working his way up the scales of management and this sort of thing.
Would your father rather you'd done that sort of thing, do you think? Rather than gone into the fighting?
Well, I never inquired about that, but I should imagine it was something that he was surprised that I hadn't taken the railway walk to the army.
Had anyone thought, or had you thought, of actually going for a commission? I mean, you had the education and the social background. Did you think of going for a commission when you went to enlist?
No, no.
Why was that?
I don't know, because I was with the lads. I'll tell you how I got a commission. I went to France.
No, I'll come back to that. But, I mean, right at the beginning, you didn't think of it, and you all joined as privates.
No,
that's
no,
what you wanted
no,
to do.
No, no.
When you joined, you went along, did they equip you with uniforms straight away?
Yes.
At St. George's, before you went off?
Yes.
Do you remember what kit you were given and a uniform?
Well, I think I should say, be honest, we had a uniform of khaki, and that was about all. There was no tin hats, there was no masks to give out or anything like that. Were simply stood in a uniform with your buttons and your regiment on your shoulders, you know. Northumberland Fusiliers, territorials, and this sort of thing.
Did you get your webbing in your bags and knapsacks and things?
Oh, yes, we got those, yes, that's so.
So then you were sent up to the Northumberland Hussars stables?
Yeah, that's right.
You say they were north of Newcastle. Where exactly were they? Do you know now?
Near Ponteland, yeah.
Near Ponteland,
yeah.
Right. And where were you actually billeted while you were feeding the horses?
Oh, in the stables. And we slept with the horses.
And that's all you were doing, looking after the horses?
Oh, yes, but we're in the army at the same time, you see.
Did you know how to care for horses? Had you had anything to do with horses before?
Well, in the village here, there were four farms where one had to get milk from every day. I was used with going for the family milk and bringing it back. In the course of time, I got to know the farm people, and my idea as a very young lad was to climb on a horse's back. Now, I developed the habit of going to the farm in the morning, and the horses had to be led to certain fields to do their work, you see. And I developed the habit of asking the chappie to lift me or help me up onto the horse's back, and I walked them to where they were going to work. That was my first knowledge of horse work. And it came in very handy, of course. Not that it was much, but I could always say I was a horseman, if nothing else.
Were you grooming the horses as well as at the stables?
We were mainly watering, leading them to water and feeding.
And how many of you went up there? Because, I mean...
I should say there was, without exaggeration, 12 to 15 went up there, you know.
And your friend William Oliver would be with you, but not George Harbottle, I presume.
No.
You were all new recruits.
Yes. We were just newly taken into the army, whereas George was with the unit, you see.
Did you have a Lance Corporal or an NCO in charge of the party?
We had a corporal, went with us, you know.
Was he like?
Well, we had to learn discipline and call him corporal and things like that. I remember how strange it was, but...
Why was it strange? What?
Well, you had no home comforts. And you wanted to get down, you wanted to go to sleep, but there was no you weren't at home and you had to get on with it, you know. And when the bugle sounded, or
reveille.
Yes, if they sounded and the all clear sounded, you had to be aware of them. You had to immediately become someone who knew what was happening in the army.
Was the corporal sympathetic? I mean, was he?
Oh yes, he knew. He knew, of course, that we were rookies, and there was never any bad. I never encountered any bad rumors. In the army, as first personnel went